Hey, I'd like to welcome James to the Protectors podcast. How's it going, James?
Jason, excellent. Thank you for the opportunity to have the conversation.
That's great. We've been friends for a while, and we finally have the opportunity to have a podcast together.
Looking forward to it. Thank you again.
Hey, so what is your background in security?
Well, entering my 29th year in the security industry, 21 of which I was with the Nassau County Police Department on Long Island, New York. I worked in patrol. I was in community affairs. I taught at the police academy. I was designated a detective, worked in juvenile, missing persons. I decided to go back to school and earn a master's degree. I retired from law enforcement in 2011 and transitioned into my second career during that time. And I've been focusing, Jason, primarily on event security and family safety and preparedness since that time.
Impressive background. And, you know, a lot of people, what they do is they try to find that transition too late in their career. And it looks like you've just jumped on it earlier in your career and kind of flowed through it. And then, bam, now you're well-versed in a security world.
Well, you know, again, it's these types of conversations. You know, everybody, you know, has gifts and talents to share with the world. And I just remind people to go out and make an impact and try to make a difference. But it's all about, you know, trust and transparency and helping one another during times of crisis.
That's the big key word right there, helping one another out, because a lot of times people are just going to fend for themselves. And now there's so much to deal with. You have to deal with protecting your family, protecting your neighbors and everything. And I think that's kind of where your book came into it. You know what? We got to do something about this. Let me get my knowledge out there and talk about it.
Well, you know, again, in November 2017, I came out with my book, What's Your Plan? It's a step-by-step guide to keep your family safe during emergency situations. And it was really, you know, based on a personal situation I had with my family. We were visiting a suburban mall in Durham, North Carolina. We were up on the second floor, and all of a sudden the lights went out, and we looked around, and everyone was looking down at their smartphones, completely desensitized to the world around them. And my son, Aiden, who's 15 at the time, was 13, had said something, Jason, so profound to me that the little hairs on the back of my neck, you know, stood up. So as we exited the mall, we looked around. You know, again, the traffic lights were out. And that scene was eerily reminiscent of my experience working with Nassau PD during the blackout in 2003. And so, you know, on the way home that night, we had a conversation, you know, on what we would do if we were faced with an unthinkable and unimaginable situation. And that was really the impetus for me to write the book, just based on something my son said to me at the mall.
Based on your son's observations, which is great, you know, you got to get the knowledge where you get it.
You know, as they say, from the mouth of babes, but, you know, we look around the world since 2017. Look what's happened domestically, internationally. Every single night on the news, there's something going on in schools, places of worship. So obviously both of us security leaders, you know, trying to get information out there in a timely manner, but certainly challenges continue on a daily basis.
Yeah, that seems to be my biggest concern now is schools, because, you know, my wife did a lot of counterterrorism stuff in the 90s with the Army and just a lot of different stuff like that. And in the Intel area, and she was at a conference back in Denver, you know, years ago, and this was probably 95. And one of the things they talked about was, you know, attacking schools. And now with Russia and with everything else going on, you almost wonder what's going to come next.
Well, certainly.
And we're not talking about, we're not talking about just like lone wolves. We're talking about, like, you know, either a domestic terrorism attack or internationally based organization coming over here.
You know, as we've mentioned, there's so much going on. Obviously, you know, the police in Portland now are getting ready for, you know, potential Antifa protesting this upcoming weekend. They're going to have over 1,000 police personnel there. So we do have, you know, as we're getting closer to 2020, we're dealing with, you know, obviously the potential of civil unrest and this political instability. And so certainly these issues are contentious for a lot of people. You know, we have, you know, obviously post Parkland, but we look at, you know, gun control and mental health and all these different issues and challenges. And as a nation, we're becoming more divided when we really should be united. So the purpose of having these conversations is to share information and try to educate the public on what best to do when they're faced with these types of scenarios.
Now, do you go and speak about like your work and the book and everything?
Well, I do actually. I've presented around the country at different conferences. So I've been focusing on event security. I've spoken 4 times at ISC East and West. And part of those conversations also had to do with kind of sharing information about my book. So it's kind of a two-pronged approach. In terms of family safety and preparedness, as well as event security. Obviously, these podcasts and, you know, just the opportunity through Facebook and different social media platforms, you know, writing different articles and blog posts and sharing information with security journals and magazines. But thought leaders, you know, working together and trying to learn from one another and sharing information, obviously, with our governmental partners, those public-private partnerships are so key, Jason, during times of crisis.
Well, it's not just during times of crisis. It's always like it's like you have to build these relationships with everybody so you can prepare for the crisis. So it's kind of like if you don't have these relationships in place, then when that crisis happens, it's like, bam. And that's why it's great that you're actually getting out there doing a media tour, doing the speaking, doing the writing, because right now the country needs subject matter experts who are impartial.
Well, again, I'm smart enough to realize that, you know, I can't do this myself. And it's really, you know, a collaborative effort working with media leaders like yourself and, you know, security leaders. But, you know, the purpose of my book is to really empower families, Jason, on what to do. And people tell me every day, James, you know, I'm afraid to go to concerts and I'm afraid to go to my place of worship. And that's exactly, you know, the goal of any, you know, anti-government group or any type of domestic terrorist is to instill fear in the American public. So, you know, I wrote this book for families. It's not your typical security practitioner's guide. It's for moms and dads. And, you know, again, it's based on something my son said to me. So I really felt, you know, compelled to try to do whatever I could, you know, to make an impact, you know, during all these difficult challenges that we're seeing. So, you know, here we are 2 years later. And when I do my trainings, people say to me, well, James, you know, I was thinking about your book and I'm more aware. And, you know, I went to the mall the other day and I saw what happened, you know, in El Paso. And I'm starting to really, you know, pay attention to, you know, the world around me. And as tragic as things are, Jason, but when people come to us, obviously, and they say, James or Jason, you know, we're listening to what you're saying, it's really rewarding because now they're starting to understand the importance of operating from a position of strength, you know, with these challenges.
Well, you know, I think most people were for the longest time putting their heads in the sand because, you know, granted we had 9/11, but everybody looked at that as like a large scale terrorist attack. And now when you're thinking domestic issues are happening where you could have active shooters anywhere and now you have active stabbers, people running around stabbing people, you really do have to have your head on a swivel. Like when you get to the movie theater, you have to know where the exits are. When you get to the mall, you have to know where the exits are. You have to know where your family is at all times. It's very timely.
It's very timely. And again, it's that pre-planned response. So I've talked about, and I'm sure you have as well, all of us, you know, in a sense that we want to have that pre-planned response, fully charged cell phones, you know, a predetermined meeting place, as you've mentioned, how you got in, how you're going to get out. If you're going to a venue, a stadium, you know, baseball game or what have you, football game is coming up with the NFL, where your vehicle is parked, you know, at the stadium. And, you know, again, I focus on stadium security, and I think they've done a great job with, you know, physical security measures, ingress, egress. But we also want to be mindful as fans are leaving a stadium and those egress routes are flowing into entertainment zones, which adjoin, you know, those perimeters at stadiums, venues, and arenas. So again, it's the stadium side of it. It's the political side where you maybe look what happened in Philadelphia with 6 police officers getting shot near, you know, Temple University as an example. So we have, you know, active shooters that are happening in neighborhoods that are, you know, adjoined to, you know, higher education, you know, universities and whatnot. So regardless of where you find yourself with your family, to really be aware of the political climate, to do your homework, to create that pre-plan response, again, tactically places you in a good position to deal with these challenges.
Well, you know, knowing where your family is a huge thing. Because, you know, I worked down in D.C. and so did my wife when our kids were really young. And the kids went to daycare in D.C. And, you know, she worked on one side of the mall and I worked on the other side of the mall, you know, the National Mall. And, you know, when anything big happens, the first thing that goes out is cell. You get no cell service because everybody's on a phone. So good luck getting through. So I remember, you know, because my kids are like, what, 2 and 4? So I'm like really paranoid, like helicopter dad. So I ended up buying the these little walkie-talkies with a 2-mile range, and we would keep them on each other just in case, because, you know, that's one frequency you can get through. But just to have to think about things like that now. And then, you know, as you go to these big events, thinking about, you know, egresses and just, you just don't know when it's going to happen. And it's probably a 1 in a million, 1 in a billion shot. But if you just have a little semblance of preparedness, it's perfect.
It really goes a long way in terms of what you can do to best survive, you know, these types of situations. And we're seeing now our nation's law enforcement, they're under a lot of stress, duress. They're doing the best they can, you know, with the resources. We look at the incident in California. Thankfully, you know, law enforcement was physically there on scene. But that unscrupulous individual at the festival had cut a hole in the fence. So if somebody is really, really focused on causing chaos and obviously mayhem, they're going to do it, whether it's with a weapon that was purchased legally or illegally. They could use a vehicle, you know, obviously knife attacks. These are very, very concerning types of scenarios. But ultimately, you know, I tell folks all the time, I'm sure you do, you know, we can have the largest military and law enforcement in the world if we can get the public to start buying into this mantra of see something, say something, and sharing information, you know, with someone in a position of authority in a timely manner.
Well, you know, then the other aspects, don't be, you know, paranoid.
Right.
You know, there's a certain semblance of awareness, but when you start living your life, you're letting them win. And, you know, it's a lot easier said than done. But, you know, sticking it, being a homebody, never leaving, always wondering what's going to happen to you. But being prepared if something happens is key to the, you know, of our daily world now.
Well, fear can definitely, you know, debilitate, you know, it can obviously slow you down in so many ways. You can be fossilized by fear, if you will. And really, you know, the mantra of empowerment and education is to obviously encourage individuals and families to not be afraid. You know, I always talk about, you know, sporting patrons. An educated, you know, fan is a safe fan. It goes out to a stadium, venue, or arena. And that can be applied to your place of worship or, you know, you're working out at a treadmill at your local fitness center, is to know exactly, you know, what you're going to do. If you're in your place of, in a corporate environment, you know, knowing those early attack indicators to violence, you know, you're grabbing coffee with a coworker and you're having a conversation and he or she, they're going through a divorce or they're under some financial strife or, you know, they're showing up late for work. You know, these are potential signs that need to be paid attention to. And I think it's important that corporations have that open door policy. You know, I've done some training here in Raleigh about, you know, workplace violence and OSHA and duty of care and, you know, having the team leaders within those space, encouraging employees to make their workplace as safe as possible by coming forward. And that's the same thing law enforcement wants from the American public, is to come forward. And, you know, I was in law enforcement for 21 years, and what I learned is obviously your reason, what you do has to be reasonable, and you have to articulate what you're doing. But also, everything is the real thing until proven otherwise. And I think if the American public can start to, you know, vet in their own mind that, hey, maybe it's not the speakers, and hey, maybe it's not somebody's, you know, car backfiring. In fact, it may be gunshots. And we've got to get past that point of not thinking that something tragic has happened when, in fact, it really may be happening.
And, you know, you bring up a good point, because nowadays I always hear little fireworks everywhere. And I'm like, how sonic was that? Was that like a 22 or was that a 223? Was that a shotgun or was that just fireworks? You know, it's like you really have to think. I mean, is there a domestic going on up the road? Is there someone doing something bad? Do I need to be prepared in my own home? Right, so, exactly. So now it's like you have to be aware of all of your surroundings.
You do. And, you know, I really wish I could espouse a notion that things are going to get better. I really do. But at the same time, I'm also, you know, very mindful of the fact that unfortunately they seem to be getting worse. And it's not, you know, it's not saying that we're fear mongers, but we're educating, we're heightening the awareness. We're trying to share information and get out to the public to let them know that, you know, these kinds of conversations are important to listening to. These kinds of conversations are important to sitting down with your family and taking it a step further, you know, and creating that response. These kinds of conversations are important to, you know, get everybody on the same page in the interest of public safety and personal safety as well.
Lots to learn. Now, let's take a different outlook on the rest of this podcast. Now, you wrote a book. Now, it's not easy writing a book. So, you know, when you first started, I mean, how did you, like, you know, how did you prepare? How did you do your investigation? How did you, like, you know, gather the information for this book? Because it doesn't just pop out of your head. I know that. I know there's a lot that goes into it.
It really does. And, you know, and you've been involved in the process. And a lot of people ask me, you know, the very same question, Jason. And I never really thought I'd write a book. I never really thought I'd write a best-selling book. I never really thought I'd be asked to write another book and be on TV. And these are real all blessings. Don't get me wrong. But at the same time, you know, I sat down and it just came to me. And I said, you know, I really need to try to do something, you know, where I can make an impact and share information. So, you know, I created a team. I hired a book collaborator, ghostwriter, if you will. My publisher is based in Plano, Texas. She's got a lot of experience. She's worked with over 300 authors. A gentleman in New Jersey did the book jacket. So, you know, some of the thought leaders out there talk about forming your pit crew, if you will. So my pit crew was, you know, my team. And so, you know, I created this book. Ironically enough, it's 82 pages long, which was my shield number as a police officer. So that I didn't plan it to be that way. It turned out to be that way. You know, I dedicated it to my mom who passed a few years ago. And of course, my wife, and again, it came from my son. So, you know, I sat down, I had these thoughts, and, you know, I started to put pen to paper, and off I went. And what was so challenging for me and my team is, as I was writing the book, you know, the Las Vegas shooting occurred. And on a personal note, my wife's girlfriend was in that shooting, almost died. A good Samaritan got her out of there. She has the book, Jason. She has some PTSD. She can't get past chapter one, which ironically enough is sports and entertainment venues. So, you know, as we're, you know, hearing her story and more stories of victims that have survived, thankfully, from these types of situations, you know, I felt to, you know, obviously compelled and people saying, James, we need to get your book out. And you know, here we are nearly 2 years later. And like with you, I'm sure, Jason, with me, they say, James, your book is ever so timely. But in our minds, it was timely 2 years ago when I wrote it. And that's just, you know, just me being a security leader. But now, you know, I look at this through the eyes of being a father, a dad, and I have two kids and a wife I love and adore. And, you know, I send them out into the same world that I send, you know, my readers and your listeners and my listeners into. So, you know, I'm concerned. You know, I don't want folks to be paranoid. Obviously, we don't want them to be, you know, fearful, but they really have to be mindful of the fact that, you know, this is the world that we're living in. These are the kinds of conversations we need to have on a daily basis, and preparedness really can go far with, you know, dealing with these types of situations.
Man, time to prepare for another book there, James. You know, or maybe update with everything going on, because since you published that, there's been so much going on in the country.
It's hard to keep up with it. And, you know, I've done some, you know, media opportunities, and it's a great way to just kind of get the message out. It goes without saying I'm thankful for it. But like you said, you know, do we want the public to be completely desensitized? And it's kind of like information overload, right? Jason, they're getting it from social media, podcasts, you know, from television. And, you know, if they just turn the channel and tune it out, it doesn't mean that it's going to go away. So, you know, we want to study, you know, the media's exposure or overexposure to these incidents. You know, one of the things that I've talked about is the contagion effect, the copycat effect, where, you know, unscrupulous individuals are seeing, you know, things that are happening in the media, and now, you know, they want to be infamous for all the wrong reasons, as an example. So we need to, you know, put some science and data and research to contagion and the media's overexposure to an incident. Obviously, the media is trying to get past naming the shooter, which I think is a terrific idea. But, you know, we want to look at social media. We want to certainly law enforcement wants to vet that responsibly. And certainly the public, if they see something, you know, online that doesn't look or feel right to them, to let somebody know, obviously, in a position of authority to take a look at that kind of situation.
So what's next? It's like an interview question now. You're on a job. What's your next step? What's your next plan?
My next plan is to have more and more of these kind of conversations, to learn from you, to learn from one another, to hear feedback, you know, from the American public, you know, after these kinds of conversations. I'm hoping that the listeners here will send you emails and say, you know, this is what I liked, this is what I'm looking for. Because you and I know, Jason, when we get feedback, it gives us, you know, the ability to kind of dig a little bit deeper and see exactly what we can do to apply, you know, all of our knowledge and training to help, you know, best help keep, you know, people safe during times of crisis. So I'm going to get out there. I'm going to continue to, you know, share whatever I can, you know, obviously to try to make the world a safer place. I know I can't do it myself, but when we have these collaborations, we learn on a daily basis. And obviously, you know, we're learning, right, Jason? We look at the Vegas, you know, situation. The smartest people in the world couldn't figure out, you know, the motive of that shooter. The smartest people are on TV every 5 minutes talking about motive. And you and I know it's important, but at the end of the day, motive, or the aspect of motive, is kind of a reactionary response to something that's tragic, that's already happened. So if we can, you know, again, you know, get in front of the motive and do the preparedness side again, hopefully we can prevent these types of tragedies from reoccurring.
Yeah, and I almost look at motive as more of like, you know, how can we use that as a lessons learned, and right, how can we prepare for the next event? Because there's always going to be a next event.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And lessons learned and after action reports and, you know, best practices and sharing information. Very, very important. But, you know, as we're doing our homework and we're studying every day, Jason, and you're writing your updates and you're doing your media, well, the unscrupulous bad actors are also doing their homework. And they're studying. They have their own unscrupulous playbook, if you will. If there's false alarms for an active shooter, an unscrupulous individual may time, you know, law enforcement's response to that scene and do their own reconnaissance. We look at the Vegas shooter. He went to several different venues and charted out, you know, his path of evil, if you will. So the unscrupulous actors are doing their homework. You know, they're filming and they're timing and they're looking at the responses, and they're also looking, you know, at the information that we're putting out there. And so as much as we train, we do it with our best, you know, the best interest at heart, but we have to be cognizant of the bad actors doing their reconnaissance and trying to, you know, create these acts of evil for their own benefits.
I hear you, brother. You know, I got to start doing some more positive podcast, man, because there's just so much to learn and so many lessons to learn and so much to be prepared for. But the thing is, the positive thing is, there are people out there like yourself that are spreading the word, spreading the awareness. So God forbid something does happen, you know, there will be a mechanism for you to get yourself to safety.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, it's, we do it on a daily basis. We do the best we can with the resources we have. We have those, you know, relationships, obviously, with our governmental partners, you know, JTTF, fusion centers. You know, obviously, public-private partnerships are very, very important. But I keep going back to, you know, the American public, you know, paying attention to the world around them, you know, and the mantras of, you know, see something, say something, run, hide, fight. And as we know, I mean, run, hide, fight doesn't necessarily happen, obviously, in that order. You know, I mean, you could be in school,
exactly,
and all of a sudden the shooter is literally right in front of you. And we saw, you know, unfortunately, what happened in the Pulse, where everybody went into the bathroom and they were waiting for the good guys to get there. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing now 2019 that, you know, the shootings are getting, you know, more volatile, more intense, and the response times, you know, these incidents are happening quicker and quicker, whether law enforcement is physically there on scene or not. So we're looking at a 5 to 7 minute window, if you will, in terms of bad stuff is over before the good guys get on scene. So what can the public do? You know, what can they take, you know, forward from this conversation? How do they view the world a little bit differently after the two of us talking about the challenges, you know, that we're seeing, you know, domestically and internationally? And so, again, I thank you for this conversation. I thank the listeners for kind of tuning in, because they certainly can get their information from multiple sources, you know, but to kind of tune into us for 30 minutes, 40 minutes to listen to, you know, two thought leaders, two folks that are really intent on just trying to make, you know, the world a safer place for not only our families, but for, you know, the families of our listeners and viewers. It's something that I take, you know, to heart. I'm extremely passionate about it. And, you know, that's really, you know, us trying to be servant leaders to make a difference in a very troubled, conflicted world.
Ah, good times, brother. Good times. I'm looking forward to when you have your own podcast, which I'm sure has to be in the works, because you need to have thought leaders out there, you know, with to get the information out, man, whether it be blogs, podcasts. People want knowledge. They don't want the 5 to 7 minute sound bites anymore.
Right. Right. And no doubt you'll be the first, if not one of the first folks on my podcast. But you're right. I mean, it's just getting the information out there. You're obviously, you know, what you're doing in terms of what's going on at the border, and how you're educating me and the American public based on your years of living it and breathing it and seeing it every day and the challenges. And again, not trying to get political here, but looking at the challenges we're seeing, you know, with securing our borders and mm-hmm. you know, how people feel strongly for it and against it. And it's the same thing with gun control and mental health. People will be passionate, you know, on both sides of the equation. But as we draw nearer and nearer to 2020, we have to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, we will continue to see political instability and civil unrest. And unfortunately, you know, we need to continue to support our law enforcement, because they have a very difficult job. But, you know, if we share information, we educate, and we do the best we can, you know, we certainly try to prevail good over evil.
Now, are there any organizations that you support, like any nonprofits or anything like that?
Well, a lot of the work that I've done, you know, in terms of my education is
just to give a shout out to.
Well, you know, again, I'm looking to get more involved with that, to be honest with you. You know, it's kind of a double-edged sword, because, you know, I definitely want to give, because that's servant leader in me. And there are organizations out there, but I'm not trying to let anybody think that I'm trying to capitalize on anybody else's misfortune.
Yeah, I understand that.
You know, so it's that balance. And so to me, if I do a presentation at a local church, you know, and I sell some books, I'm more than happy to give 10% of my earnings, you know, back to the church as a way of giving back. I've given out a lot of free books. I've done a lot of pro bono work, because that is the right thing to do, is to help people. To empower them. But to me, it's all about, you know, things coming full circle. These kinds of, conversations, we've talked quite frequently. We support each other. You know, we're obviously out there trying to do whatever we can. So, you know, as nonprofits and some of the organizations that you're working with, if you feel that I could be helpful to your message, I'd be more than happy and honored to work with you on what you're doing. But, you know, to me, it's all about giving and trying to make a difference, you know, in the world that we're living in today.
Well, I agree, man. Well, I really appreciate you coming on, and I'm sure we're going to be in a lot more contact and working on books and collaborating a lot in the future.
Absolutely. And Jason, again, it's What's Your Plan? You know, we're on jamesadimeo.com. I'm doing whatever I can to support Jason and his initiatives and vice versa. But thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Well, you know, once this comes out, we'll be sharing it, getting your feedback. But, you know, Jason, I'm honored to have your friendship and your trust, and thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, sir.